All right, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. It's our first 9 till noon show of 2025. It's great to be back and to have your company out there in Radioland. And we've loads to come up over the next couple of hours. Dr. Joe Kelly is going to be joining us in the not-too-distant future. We are going to be talking about some of the most recent documents that have been released from the archives in Dublin, Belfast and London. The public seeing them for the first time, but you don't have to trawl through them. We're going to try and pick out some stuff for you. We've got some great prizes to give away a little later on Beat the Intro. I think we're still accepting entrance to that 086 60 25,000. Just tell us your name and where you're from, and you can come on and beat the intro. I'm looking at the songs here, and you'll get them. Don't worry about that. And we've got five great prizes to give away. So not too late for you to get your name on the list and start the new year off with a freebie from Highland Radio here. Okay, and keep your calls and comments coming in on anything you want to discuss as well. But we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. Now, the Integrated Care Programme for Older People is a team that helps older people with problems like falls, frailty and memory issues. And they work together to provide the support older people need to help maintain their independence and live well at home. There are 30 ICPOP teams across Ireland, and the teams include nurses, a physiotherapist, an occupational therapist, a speech and language therapist, a social worker, a dietitian, and it's all under the governance of a consultant geriatrician. The Donegal team is small, but it is growing, and the aim of the Donegal team is to help older people live at home and avoid unnecessary hospital visits. Pat Floyd is with me now. Hi, Pat.
Good morning.
It's lovely to chat to you. How are you keeping, Pat?
I'm well, thank you. I'm good, yeah.
Very, very good. Now, you've worked with this team, and when did you... What happened in your life that sort of led you to the point where you would need to engage with the Donegal Integrated Care Programme for Older People?
Well, first of all, I had a brain hemorrhage, and then they discovered cancer. And when I got clear of all that, I had fractures in my back. So I went into hospital for about the third time in January 16th, and I came out on the 20th, the 8th of May, actually.
Wow.
So from that on, I was using those girls, and they were brilliant.
And during that time, you know, once you'd went through the stress of the brain hemorrhage and discovering you have had cancer, and thankfully you're through that now, you were suffering terrible with back pain. And I suppose were the times where you were lying in the hospital bed, Pat, wondering, is this it? You know, am I going to have my independence again? Am I going to be able to walk again? Will I be able to live somewhat pain-free?
Exactly, yeah. I thought I would never, ever be out of the house again.
But that's not the case. So when you got
the girls from that group came out to me, Emma Bree Jean and Mary, and they were absolutely brilliant. They told me that I wasn't able to walk at all, excuse me, and they told me that within 6 weeks they would have me walking.
Oh, wow.
And they did.
Wow. And how did they manage that? Was it through exercises, rehab, Pat?
Exercises. And I had a rollator, and they made me walk. I was up with my daughter. They made me walk around my daughter's house, the outside of the house. And I used to be thinking, oh, God, please go home. But anyway, they worked with me and worked. And finally, I was able to walk, you know, short distances. And then after that, I fell out of the bed and fractured my clavicle, back into the hospital again, and they were back out again. I wouldn't be here today only for them. They were brilliant.
Because I suppose, too, in dealing with you, Pat, or anyone, because we're all individual, you know, they want to encourage you, don't you, and support you, but at the same time, they don't want to push you so far that you do tell them to clear off. They have to be very special at their job to just know how to encourage you, but not sort of push you so far that you don't want to start getting active again.
Well, actually, you know, they knew my capabilities, and I suppose I thought I wouldn't be able to do all these things, but they kept pushing me and telling me I could do it, as my daughter did as well. If they thought I could do something, they wouldn't do it for me.
So fast forward a couple of years now. Do you still work with the team, or are you finished with them, Pat? Or?
Oh, God, no, I'm finished with the team. I had COVID and pneumonia then, And I think they were out after that. I had so many conditions over the last 4 years. But no, I'm finished with them now, thank God. And I'm able to go out to my football and to mass and to play bingo and all the different things that I and drive my car. So, you know, they were absolutely brilliant, the nurses, a lot of them. They were great.
Well, obviously, you were a good patient as well, Pat, because you responded well to their help. But it sounds to me like they've just given you a new lease of life. They've given you your independence back.
Oh, God. And anybody who gets offered that, I popped to come out to them. Take it by all means, because they're absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, because it's not necessarily always just, you know, keeping us above ground. And I don't want to, that sounds like a terrible thing to say, Pat, but thankfully we are living longer. But it's about having sort of your independence and a satisfying life, isn't it? You know, that's right. What they've given you.
Oh, absolutely. And God, I wouldn't be here today doing the things that I'm doing if they didn't help me and get me where I am.
Exactly, and you want to be at home, don't we? We want to be at home as much as possible.
Absolutely,
Okay, and to be able to live our lives as fulsome as possible. Do you still have to? Is your general activity now enough, Pat, or do you still have to do some exercises, or what's the story with you?
Oh, not at all. No, mate, I'm great. I can go out for small walks, and I can do anything I want to do, really.
Yeah, and I think one of the things the team try and do is to achieve what the patient wants as well. You know, set goals.
That's
I want to be able to walk. I want to be able to do this. I want to be able to do that. And with their skill sets, they can tailor that to the individual as well.
Oh, very much.
What about...
I didn't believe them when they told me they'd have me walking in 6 weeks. I thought, oh, God, you'll have your work cut out for you. But no, they did have me walking, and it was great.
Did you work with them at all in terms of diet, Pat?
Diet? No, no.
Because I think
when I was in the hospital, I didn't eat. I couldn't eat. But when I came out again, gradually my eating built up, and I wish it hadn't built up as much as it did. But anyway.
That wasn't you needed help with. But I think sometimes when you live on your own, or even if there's two of you, it's easier sometimes to cook for four people than it is for yourself, I think.
Exactly,
in a way, but you obviously have a good handle on that, Pat, and what have you. All right, okay. So really we wanted to give the positive outcomes for those that are referred to the ICPOP scheme. And I think, Pat, the message from you is, you know, if you are referred to it, they know what they're talking about and the team know what they're doing, to accept that invitation and work with them, and you can have the independence like you've had restored to you.
Oh, definitely. Just grab them if they're offered to you, grab them, and they are just absolutely brilliant.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, Pat, I'm delighted things are going so well for you. And
thank you.
It's lovely to speak to someone that's benefited from the service. It's the best way of getting the message out. So you're doing a great bit of work there, Pat. Thanks so much.
Not at all. Thank you very
much. Happy New Year to you, Pat. Take care. That's Pat Floyd there. You heard her story there. She was in hospital, was told she would never walk again. There was times when she was in the hospital, she didn't think her prospects were terribly positive, but she was referred to the Donegal Integrated Care Programme for older people. You heard her mention the three ladies plus who helped her after she had a brain hemorrhage in August 2020. Then she was told she had stomach cancer. She's through all of that, and she's back walking again after a few setbacks, and is back enjoying going to mass, driving her car, going to watch her football matches, playing cards, bingo, and all that kind of stuff. And as you heard her say there, my whole lifestyle has changed. All right, Pat, thank you so very much indeed. I really do appreciate that. I mentioned this to Lee a little earlier on about these astronauts flying around the Earth. An astronaut who's been stranded in space had the unique experience of ringing in the new year 16 times. Sunita Williams witnessed 16 sunsets, 16 sunrises from the International Space Station as it orbited the Earth every 90 minutes at 17,500 miles per hour. It's been labelled as a perk to the unplanned extension to her trip to space after a technical issue with the aircraft left her trapped there. But as I said to Lee as I say, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, although what is a conspiracy theory, you know? That's become a bit of a toxic phrase for lots of different things now. But there was a couple of them were stranded up there since the middle of the year, but had... they were only supposed to be there a week, but had Christmas hats and antlers and all manner of things with them as well, which I thought was quite interesting. A listener says, on the 19th of December, I sent you a comment saying that the Gardaí can talk the talk, but in reality, it's only talk. I predicted there'd be little or no Garda checkpoints over Christmas. There are three drivers in my family. We did a lot of driving over the holidays, covering most of the county. None of us saw a Garda or a checkpoint on our travels. The dogs in the street know that the pre-Christmas get-together by Gardaí, ambulance and fire crews is nothing more than a tea and biscuit photo op. I wouldn't phrase it like that, but that's your view. Policing is now done on social media. My 10-year driving licence expired without even having been shown to a Garda. I'm quite confident my new one won't be see the light of day either. Yes, I get where you're coming from. And policing is not necessarily you see them everywhere all of the time. But the Gardaí have their resources. And, you know, I do genuinely think that the Garda appeals and the ambulance appeals and fire services appeals at Christmas has made a difference here in this county, and I really hope it does. Right, Kilgar's with me now. Hi, Kilgar.
How you doing, Greg? How are you?
I'm doing okay. You're talking about Garda out and about or not.
Oh, well, I know. As I said to you on my text there, I was a Garda reserve and I retired in 3 years ago. I had spent a long time at it, and I joined in 2008. When I joined, there was over 1,000 reserves alone, and then it went down to 200, simply because of lack of use of reserves, and we weren't getting anything. But cut through the chase, they had a recruitment drive about a year ago now. And I think it was something like 3,000 or 4,000 people applied, yet we haven't had one reserve trained, none out and about. Why? What's the problem? What's the hassle? These reserves, every reserve that I know, they go in when they can, they give their time, it's basically free time. They go out and about. And I mean, it was there, the reserve was supposed to supplement and Garda Síochána full-time members who are overstretched.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that. But there seems to be a block with the... it seems to be the commissioner, for I spoke to the commissioner when he took over the job in Letterkenny and told him about the reserve. And to be honest with you, when I was speaking to him, it was as if he didn't even know about a reserve. He said, oh, that's a good idea, because I was telling him, like, patrolling, community policing, out and about. And he says, yeah. And I said, he seemed, oh, that'd be a good idea to use a reserve. But nothing has happened, and that was in 2019.
Yeah, I know. Back in 24 then, I'm just reading an article we had here on our website. It was in July of 2024. A new campaign was underway to recruit more than 650 Garda reserves. It's hoped there will be 1,000 serving Garda reserve members by 26. There are currently 341, we're told. But it's interesting in his comments, really, he didn't really talk... the Garda Commissioner in his statement, it was more about diversity, if you know what I mean, that he was talking about the need to encourage greater representations from minority communities and what have you, rather than the work they do or what they might do. It's a noble exercise, don't get me wrong. The more representative the Garda is, probably the better. I'm not criticising that, but he doesn't really talk to its importance or what roles they might have or what have you. I presume they could buddy up with Garda too, which means that the Garda force generally could be stretched further to cover things like we've been talking about today. That would be the benefit I would see in it.
Well, absolutely. But again, I had the discussions with, it would be, I think it's the Assistant Commissioner Hillman, who told me that it was none of my business, basically, at the end of the day, that it wasn't to be involved. But I had sent about the special constables in England, and I stress in England, that go out. They can go out on their own. They've been taught, and recently there they have actually done road policing, where special constables go out on road policing, not with anybody else. They also have special constables in another situation where they've teamed up with, say, a paramedic, and they go to situations where you probably would need a member of Garda Síochána and a paramedic and they've teamed up, they have special cars for them. So, I mean, there's such a lot of things that could be done, but they won't do it here for some reason.
Where does the resistance come from? Like, what's the Garda representative associations or view on it?
I don't think so. I think definitely at the start, the GRA did not want the Garda Reserve. But I think basically with Garda Reserves working and showing, like, you go out, I mean, as I say, you know, they don't look at you and say, oh, he's a Garda Reserve, I'm not going to punch him. You know, they don't look at you and say, oh, he's a Garda Reserve, I'm not going to deal with him. It doesn't happen. You know, everybody's treated the same. And as I say, when you're out there, you have to deal with the same as a member, a full-time member has to deal with. And I think they appreciate that. Now, they do definitely know that. There's no resistance, I don't think, from members at all. It seems to be from the top brass.
Well, the situation is more dire than I mentioned a little earlier on, because Deputy Pa Daly chased this up for Sinn Féin, and it turns out that in 23, only 140 Garda Reserve members claimed their allowance for that year. So the number of active Garda Reserves is actually well below 200. So that is completely, I mean, you spread that over the 26 counties, it's nothing like it's non-existent.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, but as I say, it's part of the reason is because they didn't progress. When I started, number one, we hadn't public order powers, and we hadn't a lot of traffic, road traffic, we hadn't. We got those powers that were progressing slightly, because if you were out in public order, and it was very hard to arrest somebody if they hit you because you hadn't got the powers. Then it changed, and then that came around, and then they went into the road policing, which is one of the big things that they kept saying the reserve could be used for, and that's why I put that, was talking about it, because if there was more reserves, and as I say, recruiting, if you get the recruiting numbers, the amount of people that applied, I know they won't all get into the reserve or they won't all get it, but the amount of people that applied for this part-time, basically no pay, it's very little pay, it's 3,000, I think it's been increased a year now, if you do 2,008 hours. But, you know, they have over 4,000 people apply. And the last time, I think it was nearly 3,000 people applied for the reserve. Yeah, this has been going on since, you know, you're talking about 24 is when they said it. I met the policing authority. I and other reserves met with the policing authority to discuss this in 2018.
Yeah, I know it goes back a long time. But if you look at it, though, it's kind of concerning when, you know, obviously we're going backwards in terms of the use of the Garda Reserve. There have been calls for sort of the Garda to actively try and retain and recruit. I mean, there was a big fanfare of the three Garda coming to Donegal, right? And that's a concern in of itself. Welcome to Donegal. I think some of them are from Donegal, but in terms of welcome to the force. But it shouldn't be big news getting, you know, three Garda when we know of the retirements and what have you, and people, you know, reaching retirement age. And there doesn't seem to be a future, as far as I can see, there doesn't seem to be a tangible future plan for policing in this country, unless I'm missing it, if you know what
well,
I mean.
Well, I would agree with you. I don't think there is. I think they seem to do these press briefs and then you hear nothing and nothing happens and there's nothing about it. I mean, even in the recruitment process, even in Templemore, where when I was being trained, reserves were being trained at the weekends and coming down, which suited, you know, like when you're working, it suits you to go down at weekends, and you've been trained in Letterkenny. But there was guards all during the week. And I mean, we were talking about hundreds of guards being trained during the week, because when we were coming in on a Friday, they were all going, you know. And now, suddenly, everything, you know, they only seem to be able to do maybe a couple of hundred at a time over so many months, whereas it was just flowing out. I don't know if it's because economics are getting better and maybe conditions for guards are tough.
It's not. It's just, unfortunately, it is. Guards aren't as respected like they used to be. I don't know what it. I think going through COVID and the role that Garda were asked to take in that, I think, in terms of the policing of public protests, that the Garda are sort of almost left out you know, left out to dry in that regard too. They're always the bad guys, right? But they're only following orders. They only have to do what they have to do. Between that and this new sort of crack of, you know, sticking your mobile phone in someone's face and saying whatever you want to say to them, as I've said before in this show, it's not a job I'd recommend to my children. Well, for those reasons, because there doesn't seem to be the same respect for Gardaí that there used to be there, which I think is really unfortunate.
It's not the respect, but I worked during COVID and I was doing checkpoints, which a lot of people didn't like.
Your phone's gone to pot, Kilgar. I don't know if you've moved, but maybe you could move.
I worked during COVID. Can you hear me?
No, it's got worse.
And, all right. I worked during COVID.
No, it's gone all.
Can you hear all right?
Yeah, go on. It's improved there. Go ahead. You worked during COVID.
And I remember at the end, like, people seemed to be okay. I think I remember one customer, for the want of a better word, wasn't great. But I remember coming near the end of the checkpoint, a lady stopped and handed out a box of biscuits for us all. So, I mean, you know, there's still people out there. A lot of people have a lot of respect for the Gardaí. It's just a certain percentage, you know. And I think it's a great job for anybody that's going into it. I only done it part-time now, but it's hard. It's really hard. It's difficult. But I think it's a great job for anybody to become a full-time member. I would have loved to have been a full-time member, but it was too old. But there you go.
All right, listen, thanks for that, Kilgar. Always good to get an insight. I do appreciate it. Hiya, Paul. Good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, Paul. You've actually got quite an interesting perspective on this story in terms of Gardaí and becoming a guard.
Well, I do, because we have a son stationed in Dublin as a young guard. You know, it's his first time, you know, being stationed, and he was stationed in Dublin. And the amount of money that those young recruits get for what they do is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
There's not even enough money to keep them going. They can't even afford his rent on a monthly basis. We have to send him up money every other week just to help him keep going. Now, he's thinking about giving up the job purely because he just cannot cope with the money side of things.
I mean, that's not a good reflection on the system, is it, where we have a newly qualified guard that can only survive with the support of the parents?
Well, he can't survive because we have to send him money on a regular basis to help him pay for his rent, to help him run his car. He doesn't even come home that often because he can't afford to come home because it just costs him too much money to come down the road to teach. He's constantly waiting on the next paycheck to come in. And for the amount of abuse that they get on a daily basis, being spat at, I mean, he was involved in those riots up in Dublin and he didn't mind one bit, but in fact, that way he didn't love it, but they had no bother doing the job. And he was called all the names of the day on a daily basis. And some of the things that he has to deal with on a regular basis, maybe not a daily basis, but a regular basis, and for the amount of money that he's getting for that, I'll tell you how bad it is. He had his girlfriend, who's in college, who went up to stay with him in Dublin for the summertime, and she got a job in a local coffee shop, and she was being paid more than him.
Wow.
And the only way he can survive in any shape or form to do as much overtime as he can, and then he's constantly working and just working and sleeping just to survive.
And Paul, if he sticks it out, are there pay increases coming, you know, after a year or so?
Eventually, maybe eventually, but you're talking years.
Yeah.
You're talking living on the breadline for years, like, before you get any kind of decent kind of goal.
And as a dad, what would you want him to do?
I mean, he won't leave the job, but he won't because he likes it. He likes it too much, but it just seconds me to think that that's all they think that the hierarchy think that they're worth, these young recruits, that they can't not even give them a good wage, but give them a decent wage, give them enough to survive on, and have some sort of a life.
And Paul, I mentioned it to the previous caller there about there just seems to be a situation now in this country whereby there is no respect for Gardaí, that the public think that
there's no respect, zero respect. The respect for a guard in Dublin, are you joking me? I mean, I'll tell you where they love to see the guards coming because they know because they know that they can get a bit of crack at them and give them all the abuse of the day. That's the amount of respect the guards have.
It's a tough one.
But anyway, apart from all that, I mean, he doesn't mind that. Yes. He doesn't mind that. Yeah. And he likes the job. And he's, you know, there's a good network of support up around Dublin. There's, you know, there definitely is. You know, they do get support from the rest of the crew.
But he should not be on less money than if he was working in a coffee shop, given the additional dangers and what have you. And also, too, I presume his wage is the same for someone that might be based in Carrick and Shannon, where the cost of living would be much less and rent would be much less than what have you.
Exactly. And there's no allowance whatsoever allowed for a young guard being stationed in Dublin or Letterkenny. Yeah.
And teachers and nurses are in the same boat as well, actually, it has to be said.
Yeah.
It's not a bit wonder they're heading off. All right, yeah. Paul, listen, thanks for that. Pass on our best wishes to all. Take care of yourself, Paul. Interesting insight there. A texter says, I think the comments are either Gardaí are very unfair. I experienced a very high rate of Garda presence on the roads pre-Christmas and over the Christmas period. It's not that they're unfair, it's just people's experience, listener. And I appreciate your experience is different, and that's good. If you've seen more and that's what you want, people are just speaking of their experience, if that makes sense. So I don't think they're being unfair. They're just saying, look, this is what I saw. Hi, Greg. The roads are treacherous. A bit of snowfall just outside Letterkenny. It's like a bottle. Thanks, Hughie. And thanks for getting that into us. And we can pass that on. A number of driving tests in Letterkenny cancelled this morning due to the weather. Surely that's the time you want to get people out, isn't it? So you can see how they might perform in colder conditions. But anyway, it is the system as it's set up. Boncrana Lower Main Street was a disgrace with litter yesterday evening, but this morning it was totally clean. The Tidy Towns must have been out lifting the rubbish, fair play. I have nothing but admiration for the Tidy Towns people all over the place and often, depending on where I'm travelling through towns in the morning, towns and villages, and you see them out picking it up. And when most people, I suppose, are heading out, a lot of the mess has already been cleared up. They are amazing people with such a love for their community and should be celebrated even more than they are. But fair play to the crew in Buncrana, obviously doing a fantastic job there. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. And I'm joined in studio now by Sinead Murphy. Sinead, how are you?
Hello,
Thanks so much for calling in and saying hello to us.
Thanks for having me.
Right, it's your story really, isn't it? And you've been speaking openly about the mental health aspect of taking drugs.
Yes.
So I suppose, where do you want to start? What your perception was like beforehand, you know, I mean, were you familiar with the people's sort of casual use, it does no harm, blah, yeah. blah, 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 that was your perception, was it?
I did always hear the stories about, you know, people taking it once and their life going to mess.
Yeah.
And I knew about those stories, but everyone thinks, sure, it wouldn't be me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And then it was me.
Right, so you took acid.
Yes.
It's a psychedelic drug, isn't it?
It is.
Okay, so what was that, just a silly decision you made as you see it, or was it you say, right, I'm going to try it once, or what was the...
So a month coming up to taking acid around-ish, I was dead set on taking it. Like, I was so interested in it.
Right.
I researched a wee bit about it. A lot of opening your mind type stuff.
Yeah.
So I was dead set. I was always going to take it, like... And no matter what, I was going to take it.
So you'd actually researched it and decided that this is an experience you wanted to have at least once?
Yeah.
Okay, so was it hard to get hold of?
So I was at a festival trying to get hold of it with my friend. We couldn't get it all because everyone else was taking it. So we never got it that day, but it's easy enough when you know the right people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you did get it. What was the scenario then for you to take it?
I was in an attic. A funky attic, may I say. So like cool lights, you know, tapestries type stuff. And it was just me and another person together, so it wasn't a big group.
Yeah. And how was it consumed?
It's like a wee piece of paper that you just put on your tongue.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of eat it.
Right, so what happened?
Oh, so the trip itself was just awful. A lot of negative religious themes on it.
How long did it go on for?
Oh, like 16 hours, I think.
What?
Yeah, the trip itself was like 16 hours. But then after that, it was about 2 weeks until I was fully in psychosis, I want to say.
So just whilst you're on it, like what level of consciousness, and I don't mean like awake, I'm on about sort of consciousness of what was going on, awareness really, did you have during the experience after you took acid?
Oh, blups here and there.
Yeah.
Like, I remember a good bit of it, but not everything. A lot of things I can't correlate in the right time.
I can't, I get you, yeah. Because so much time passed.
Aye.
And so what is the experience like? What are you experiencing, if you know what I mean? So you...
On acid?
Yeah,
or on acid,
yeah.
So it starts off with, like, the walls getting about
wobbly.
Wavy. Wobbly, yeah.
Wow. This sounds horrendous.
No, this is a good bit.
This is
a fun bit.
Yeah.
It started off grand. Like, it was... my experience was... So there was lights already, but there was more funky lights on the walls and stuff that weren't really there. That was my the drug doing that. And then there was dancing shadows.
Right.
Like human shadows dancing. And then when it went bad, the lights went all red. So like it kind of like looked like it was coming towards me. Like it went dark and red.
Yeah.
And then it just went really bad then.
Right, okay. What happened next then?
So you
said how long, when you say, so I'm not familiar with the terminology, so how long after, so you had the 16 hours, right, but how long was it till you were back to...
Normal.
Yeah.
Well, because I had psychosis...
Right.
It was, I want to say, 3, 4, 5 years until I was completely like this.
Unbelievable. So all of, so 4 or 5 years, which we'll talk about, was all triggered by that one
yeah.
experience. So it obviously had a lasting impact on you.
Yeah.
So, right. So after the trip, so to speak, is concluded, what was your life like then? Did you expect to go into that attic, do that, go through the experience, maybe have a nap and then carry on with the rest of your life?
Yeah, I did. 100% think
but
that was going to happen.
Happened.
That's not what happened.
Yeah. So what happened then after that?
2 weeks after taking acid, I flew to Paris without telling anyone, without telling my family or no one. I left my phone on the plane, they trust in God more. As I said, my psychosis is very religious.
Yeah.
And I was in Miss in Person for about a week. And then was found, my family actually flew out and found me, like Liam Neeson.
I actually seem to remember this. How long ago was this?
This was in 2018.
Right, there was a public appeal, wasn't there?
There was.
Yeah, I do remember that.
That was me.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I'm glad we found you. Right.
Thanks.
So how were you able to function in Paris? You know what I mean? Like, when you got off the plane and what have you, and you were trusting in God or whatever way you wanted to phrase it, were you functioning? Were you going into coffee shops and just chatting normal, or were
no.
you?
I looked mad. Mm. Like, there was a point where I was... I thought that I could walk through walls.
Yeah.
So I was like walking with my head down and like...
You were going like this time.
Just like I would
work.
Walk into a wall
yeah.
and then just turn and keep walking with my head down. I was praying the rosary a lot and no, I definitely didn't look normal. So
you were sectioned in Paris?
I was.
And was that a decision the police made there or...?
No, my family made that
okay.
decision. The police weren't really involved in Paris. Like, I know the police here were looking for appeals and they are one of the reasons why my family knew to go to Paris.
Yeah. So whilst in St. Anne's, you were diagnosed with drug psychosis. So what is that in layman's terms?
So it's drug-induced psychosis is basically psychosis. So psychosis is usually a symptom of a mental illness.
Yeah.
But drug psychosis means you don't have a mental illness. It's just because of the drugs
wow.
that psychosis came about.
Right, so you were there for a week. Do you get any sense that you're getting more clarity in France or Paris, that you're coming through this, or it was just they had you for a week and then sent you back?
So I was medicated in Paris. I still held beliefs. I was medicated for 3 years after, and I held those beliefs those whole full 3 years. Mm-hmm. But I just pushed them to the back of my head.
When you came back to Ireland, you went to Granshaw in Derry. It's the Grange Mental Hospital in Derry. Is that what it's actually called? Is it
Grangewood?
Grangewood. Okay. Yeah.
Grange is the old term.
I was going to say we don't use the mental hospital terminology anymore. But anyway, you spent a few weeks in there as well. I presume this is to try and get you on a medication that works with you. Is this when you have drug-induced psychosis? Can you be counselled out of that? You know, like in other words, talk to people and they try and.
I think you probably counselling usually comes with medication. Yeah. I doubt very much that most health professionals would let you go without medication at all. Antipsychotics usually are needed.
Yeah. Okay. So you spent 3 years on those drugs.
Yes.
Okay. And what was life like?
So it was very, I want to say dull. I was never my full self. Mm. I wasn't as bubbly or talkative. Kind of kept to myself a good bit. Zombified, I want to say. But I'm on new medication now.
Yeah.
So.
And did you take acid again then?
No, never.
Right, but did you have a delayed then experience? I read in your notes you had a... audible hallucinations.
Oh, yeah, after being on olanzapine, this antipsychotic, mm-hmm. for 3 years, because it was put down to drug psychosis, I was allowed to come off by doctors. And that's whenever I went on my second episode, which was a lot of audible hallucinations.
Wow, which must have been horrendous for you. And was it during that period that you decided to head up a mountain and pray?
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
It wasn't that I decided to head up a mountain in prayer. It was I didn't want to, but I was kind of kept being told by the voices of God.
Yeah.
So that I didn't want to do that at all, but because of it, the amount of time it was going on for,
your brain was telling you had to do it, so therefore you had to fulfill what your brain what your brain wanted. Sleeping, what was sleep like?
Sleeping didn't really happen that much. It was very blocked, so that I might have 2 or 4 hours max, and then I'd be up and then maybe have a nap during the day. It was very all over the place.
Yeah, okay. And after you come down off the mountain too, you were diagnosed with schizophrenia. There was a violent outburst towards a police officer. They didn't press charges.
No, they didn't.
Understanding, presumably, what you'd went through, which I think is... credit to them.
Yeah.
But after that experience, you were sectioned again. And this is where you got a schizophrenia diagnosis.
Yeah.
Now, did you have schizophrenia before taking the acid?
No.
So everything that we're talking about follows from this one drug's experience.
It does. I would want to mention that, and my family, it's and distant relatives, schizophrenia runs.
Something may have triggered it if it wasn't the acid.
Yeah.
At some point. Okay. So how are you feeling now then? You're on new drugs now. Is it treatment for schizophrenia? Is it still the drug psychosis or what are you on treatment for at the moment?
It's still an antipsychotic, but it's a different one. It's a Aripiprazole. I find it better. It doesn't make me sluggish.
Yeah.
I get no side effects that I'm aware of anyway.
Sinead is thankful that she developed schizophrenia when she did.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that sentence to me.
Well, now I have 2 kids
and
a boyfriend, and I would have hit the go through psychosis through childbirth.
Yeah.
So childbirth, anything traumatic in life can trigger psychosis. And I'm just so thankful that it did at the time because I was only 19. I had no family. Oh, I had family. I mean, no family of my own.
What you mean? Yeah. So you're ultimately responsible for yourself rather than having dependents. So... this has been going on now for 6 years. You are 3 years episode free. Mm-hmm. So really, I mean, it's nothing. None of this is ideal, but you're in a good place now, aren't you? You've talked with your family and your partner and what have you, and you seem to be on the right medication, which you probably will be on for the rest of your life.
Yes.
You kind of accept that, don't you?
I do. And I forget what I was going to say.
Yeah, no problem. No, that's all right. So... why are you speaking publicly about this? Is it to, because you've been incredibly honest, right? Mm-hmm. And I think too, what was quite interesting was where you said, you know, you were gonna take acid, you wanted that experience, right? Because you'd heard other people had a good experience with it. Are you speaking out to discourage anyone from doing what you did?
Yes, I definitely want to make people more aware of the dangers of it. I'm not saying that it's 100% dangerous, because I know there's microdosing, there's medical care, like in all our countries where it's legal to get benefits from. But most of the time you're playing Russian roulette with your mental health doing this stuff. It's definitely something to think about before you do it.
Yeah, and I think it's, we're all different, aren't we? And, you know, if you have, and it may not be diagnosed or what have you, but if you have a mental health issue, even something, you know, strong anxiety, what have you, it can all be triggered and exacerbated. You don't know how your brain, your electronics, is going to respond to such a powerful drug.
100%. And a lot of people, like a lot of comments I'm getting on my TikTok or messages that I'm receiving, so many more, like, negative stories. A lot of people never get out of it. A lot of people stay within the trip.
Yeah, I think
forever.
It's kind of, in terms of drug taking, it's not talked about much, is it?
It's not,
and
no.
You would know now from the feedback you're getting on your TikToks, that there's a lot of people continue to struggle through their life.
I never heard of psychosis before I went through it. And then once I went through it, loads of people were coming up to me being like, oh, I know so-and-so, I went through it. And I was like, why is no one talking about this? Yeah. Like, this is mad.
Yeah.
And I think it puts a lot of shame on people whenever it's not talked about. It makes them feel like it's a shameful thing. And it's, some people don't go through it with drugs either. It can just come on through life.
Yeah.
Psychosis, it can, as I said, it can be stress induced. So even the stress induced psychosis aren't talked about that much.
Yeah, for sure. And that one experience, you know, that's sort of led to all of this. As you say, we don't fully know what may have developed in your life anyway, if you know what I mean. But this obviously was a, because if I shouldn't presume, but if you ask people four or five negative outcomes from drug taking, right? Firstly, it wouldn't be based off one experience. You know, most people would think it was prolonged taking. But if it was cannabis use or cocaine or heroin or what have you, people have this sort of maybe four or five things that they'd expect to see. Your story is where you voluntarily said, right, I'm going to try this, but the terrible ramifications and implications for you of that. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's, as we've just been saying, it's not talked about much.
It's not. Yeah. I think a lot of people are scared to come out and talk about it. And, you know, I understand a wee bit why, because I see some of the comments I'm getting. Like, okay, fair enough. But, you know, you ignore them, you get on with it. That's about it.
Yeah, very good. Okay. And it's also interesting, I think it's good that it's a younger person talking to younger people too.
Yeah.
You know, rather than someone like me coming across as preachy. This is your life, and you seem pretty open-minded, but it's a reality. You're just saying as things happen for you. Well, I hope you continue to be episode-free and get to enjoy your family and your life. And I really appreciate you coming on and sharing the tale that, and it's one that maybe parents or guardians that are listening might share with their younger people particularly, or even older people who might decide to go down this route, that it only takes, taking drugs once for have this huge impact that it had on your life, Sinead. Thanks so much for... go ahead, yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Is that it?
That's okay. All I was going to say.
All right, no, it's been our pleasure. Thanks for calling, Dan. Thanks. That's Sinead Murphy there. And as I say, a tale that even one experiment with drugs can have devastating implications. I'll start off with a weather warning that's just been issued. It's moderate weather advisory for Donegal. Sleet and snow in places this weekend, with some disruption possible. A spell of rain will spread northwards over Ireland during the course of Saturday, turning to sleet and snow in some areas. Rain, sleet and snow will continue for a time on Sunday before clearing eastwards into the Irish Sea. Significant accumulations of snow are likely in some counties, potentially Donegal. Hazardous travelling conditions, travel and service disruption. So that comes into effect at midnight on Saturday and is valid until midnight on Monday, and it's sort of across the area, but it also affects us here. More imminently, I'll give you the weather forecast for what's left of today. Oh, I've clicked into that one again. Sorry, just give us a second. Why do I do this on my phone? The weather forecast for today. Right, the frost has cleared now to leave a cold day, but it'll be dry and sunny in many areas. There'll be scattered showers, though some of hail and sleet, and a few snow flurries today too. Highest temperatures of just 2 to 6 degrees, and some of you sending in some travelling conditions, obviously, and my phone's just on the blink. I'll get to that in a second. Someone messaged in that the Dunloe to Letterkenny is passable, but with care. Right, before we take a break and head towards the news coming up in the next hour, we've got loads of giveaways for you. We're playing Beat the Intro. Not too late to get your name on the list. We'll just bring you on air, play you a song, you'll guess it. And you'll win one of five great prizes, a scooter from LK Bikes, a €50 voucher for Callahan's Electrical in Letterkenny and Burt, a €50 voucher for Century Complex in Letterkenny. Lots of fun to be had with that. A €50 voucher for O'Donnell Fuels Crawley, Illestrin and Kilmacrennan, and a €50 voucher for McGurk's Golf, Letterkenny. So when you get the song right, and I'm sure you will, you'll pick a number between 1 and 5, and I will gift you the prize associated with that number. All very exciting, isn't it? Right, news with Michaela coming up very shortly.